it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Wiz and Ashes Daily Podcast. And breathe. What a day. What a test match. What a series. And you just couldn't quite shake Australia off all day. And when Johnny Bairstow felt even England needing 90 to win with 4 wickets in hand, it seemed like that might be that for the Ashes and for who knows what else. But Harry Brooke was brilliant and Chris Woakes was brilliant. And then Mark Wood came in and did what Mark Wood seems to do
now. Mark Wood, brilliant.
Yeah, and he saw England home by 3 wickets. The Ashes are alive, Jim. How are you feeling?
Oh, I feel great now. I was really twitchy. We had our little luncheon together, didn't we? And we sort of asked each other how we were feeling. And I was definitely on the twitchier end of the scale. It was a mad sort of 10-15 minute period after lunch with Stark and getting Bairstow and Stokes fell pretty quickly as well, didn't he? And it was all looking a bit dicey. And that amazing partnership between Brooke and Woakes got us over the line, really. Brooke fell just before the end and Wood came in with a dashing cameo to see it home for England.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing was just extraordinary, wasn't it? I mean, yeah, the crowd was amazing, the swings from one side to the other. The actual cricket was obviously a very high quality. I mean, Test cricket is just so good, isn't it? The Mark Wood, Chris Woakes partnership especially was amazing. Because there's something about 3 wicket wins, which I'll just say I did predict it would be 3 wickets yesterday.
You did.
But there's something about them where the crowd gets about 5 minutes to actually enjoy it, don't they? It's not like it's it's tense almost the whole time, but there's that little bit at the end where they can sort of, the cheers are a bit more like, rather than like having that relief to them. But the atmosphere was just unreal, wasn't
it? Yeah, I went out on the balcony actually, so I finished my OBO shift just about half an hour after lunch and went out on the balcony and then just refused to move from there during that partnership. And yeah, the atmosphere was just incredible. Wood even gave a shout out to the Northern crowds after the match. And then someone just pointed out to me on the internet that England don't play a Northern Test match in 2027, which is a bit of a shame. But definitely one thing from this week was it's a knowledgeable and very up for it crowd here at Headingley.
Actually, one of my favourites in the Test match was a combination of that, which is when Mitchell Marsh went to pick up the ball, I think. Maybe it was on the second evening, possibly. And so he picks it up and then realised just after he picked it up that he shouldn't have done that and that England could appeal for an obstruction of the field decision they wanted. And England obviously didn't appeal, but you had a crowd appeal.
So there was
loads of, like, you know, being not liking the Aussies, being really pissed, but also knowing the game in that, which is great. Let's go back to Harry Brooke a bit, I guess.
Okay.
Because he had a weird sort of Ashes series, hasn't he? I mean, he looked good at Edgbaston. There was, you know, one freakish dismissal, but he makes 70, 80 odd runs in the game. Made 50 at Lords. It's kind of felt like things have turned quite quickly. There's sort of been a bit of short ball chat around him. Mm-hmm. People thought, been suggesting that maybe Pat Cummins has his number. Mm-hmm. And then he gets demoted from number 3 in the chase for this game. Mm-hmm. But he was really good, wasn't he?
I mean, yeah. And you know, if you're crowing about your prediction about it being a 3-wicket win, I predicted Harry Brooke would get an 80, not out. And, you know, he sort of, he just let it go at the end there. But yeah, I think he was a bit guilty of giving his wicket away a few times in this series. And today it was a real proper, it was a sort of a number 3 knock really, because it was high pressure. It was against top quality bowling. It was relentless and it was manipulating the strike. It was putting away the bad ball. And, you know, he got it to within what I think 20. It's just shame personally for him that he wasn't there at the end to see it home. Would have been a great moment for him. But I guess he's had a natural drop off because his numbers were absolutely phenomenal, and you'll know, but it came up today on the screen that he's one of the quickest to 1,000 runs in.
Well, yeah, but he's the quickest in terms of balls faced.
Okay.
But second is Tim Southey, so I don't know if that's a huge marker of batting quality, but it says something.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it says.
So he's had a little bit of a drop off, but you know, he's still got runs in this series. I guess it's just that he came in with such expectation around him, and England basically rejigged their side to get him in, and that led to the Bairstow folks sort of debate. And it felt like, yeah, in front of his home crowd, that was a real special innings.
Yeah, and I suppose actually that period when he came into bat, although like it was 20 overs into the innings, it was actually a pretty tough time to bat, because that was just after Australia had changed the ball. And we got some stats from cricketers that was actually when the ball swung the most throughout the whole innings, pretty much.
Okay.
So, like, Mitchell Marsh was basically hooping around corners at that point. So, yeah. Actually, if you're looking for evidence that he can play that sort of bowling, there is some evidence in that, even though it came from number five, weirdly.
Yeah.
Is that what you do for the next test, then? Is him at number three, basically?
Stokes was asked, wasn't he, after the match by Atherton during the post-match interview, and he said that Moeen basically came up to him and Brendan McCullum last night and said, I want to go in higher up, I want a sort of piece of the action, and I think I can sort of make a difference in the game.
That's just how it works in this team now, right? Like, Pope sends him a text before last summer saying, can I bat at three? And he's like, oh yeah, sure. And then today Moeen does it. I mean, you could be doing it if you find Stokes' phone number.
Send him a pigeon or something like that. But yeah, so I think he said that it was just a thing. It's not going to be a thing for the next match. That's not like a permanent move or anything. They were just sort of flying by the seat of their pants a bit. Didn't quite come off today, but you can sort of see the logic around it, you know. I'm happy with Brook at three. I think he's got the game for it. You know, he perhaps needs to rein in some of his attacking shots a little bit if it's going to become a permanent thing. But I don't mind him there at all. And I like the balance of this England batting lineup with Wokes coming in down the order, having a test century to his name, and it just gives that bit of stability. So, you know, that was a really, really important knock from him today, and a classy one too.
Yeah, because it was interesting as well, because, I mean, Moeen in 5 or 15, you can't call that success at number three.
Mm.
Then, obviously, you've got the Brook innings, which is partly because down number five, maybe. And also, you had that he'd, like, seen offer a come-in spell, and it felt like a lot of today was just about, like, like England fans be looking at things like, how long is this guy bowled for, can he go after? And actually, after lunch, when Stark, and we'll get to Stark, who was brilliant, he was in his, like, third over, and I was looking at me like, how long's Stark got? I feel like he's bowling for ages. Like, he's bowled 15 balls.
The blood pressure when Stark and Cummins were bowling for England fans was, I mean, just going through the roof, where there was that drop-off when Marsh and Boland were, you know, the supporting bowlers came on, and Murphy too. There was a sort of a little release of the pressure valve. But certainly when those two, I mean, Mitchell Stark was phenomenal, but Cummins as well, you know, there was, even at the end there when it was three wickets and 20 runs, Cummins has got the ball, you think, you know, he could get a hat-trick here or something like that and just lurch this game again back to Australia, but thankfully they got home.
Yeah. Should we talk about Australia then? Because
we've
mentioned that Stark was really good. And I guess also there was a big drop of actually from Stark and Cummins to the rest. Like Boland, okay, bit of reversions to me, and obviously he can't average, you know, nine or whatever it was in Test cricket forever. Todd Murphy, I mean, I guess he didn't bowl badly as such, but he got, you know, mauled by Ben Stokes, and then obviously they're not going to trust him as much as they do Nathan Lyon, but equally, you know, it is a fourth innings chase and your spinner's barely bowling. I don't know. Let's talk about Stark, I guess. Well, like, he was brilliant, and he almost covered up for the fact that they had those weaknesses in their attack, which is impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that spell this morning and then the one after lunch was really a game changer. I thought he'd massively tilted the scales back to Australia. England did well to, I don't know how many, but again, Ben, you might know how many he bowled in that spell, but it felt like he was just bowling and bowling and bowling, and the pressure was really on. So they did do well to get through that period. And then there was a tail off. You know, it is notable England have attacked Boland and sort of put him off that nagging line. And you can just feel the tension just go down a little bit, and the intensity, I guess, of the cricket go down a little bit when Australia's second string come on.
Yeah, and do you reckon Australia, do they bounce back from this okay? I mean, they, you know, they've they'd won two close games. Now they've lost a close game, albeit they didn't lose it today, right? Mm. Like they got closer than in a way they deserved. Mm. Do you think they? I mean, I guess there's also a break between the next test. Do they just regather?
I think the break will probably do both sides good. You know, in terms of resting, and also there'll be 8 days of noise. You know, for the Ashes, and it'll build up to this big thing for Manchester. I think that someone said to me in the pub last night, this series is going two ways. It's 5-0 Australia or it's 3-2 England. Those are the only two possible results. And England coming back 2-1. I mean, I don't think that is the case. Australia could easily, that's what happened after Headingley last time in 2019, Australia bounced back and won at Old Trafford. I think England will take a lot of heart from that match, because actually if Joe Root catches Mitchell Marsh on 12, then the margin of victory is a lot bigger, and that was a big drop, and Marsh's innings really held that Australian first innings together and set a semi-imposing target. So, you know, England, it felt like England have made the running in a lot of these tests and then given away crucial opportunities to really sort of ram it home, whereas in this test, even though they had a little bit of a flutter, they managed to get over the line.
Yeah, it's actually that gap between this test and the next test is actually, that's part of what makes this win so big, I think. Like, I think that the thing that would have felt really bad is facing that, like, that 10, however it is, that 10-day stretch where you're like, God, what do I even think about for this time? You know, that's like, you know, you've spent so much energy thinking about it. And then, like, whereas when it gets to Old Trafford, even if England lose there, it's two back-to-back tests. At least it's all over quite quickly, even if that loss happens. Like, the dead rubber will still be a dead rubber, but at least there's not a dead bit before it. And also the teams can sort of regroup and just go just fully at each other for 10 days.
And that's great, isn't it? You really want it. You want to see full strength sides going at each other. That's why it was a shame that Lyon got injured, because he does, you know, Australia are definitely a weaker side without him. And, you know, hopefully Wood will be able to pull through that eight or 9 days or whatever it is. Mark Wood has got a good chance of bowling at Old Trafford. And, you know, England have got selection, I don't know if we've got time to get onto it, but they've got sort of selection quandaries ahead of that, because of people doing well.
Wood and Wikes now.
Well, precisely, those two guys who have come in have done the best and been the most influential in winning England that game. So England have had this thing where they've been very loyal to their players and they're sticking with them, but actually, you know, in resting or rotating or dropping Anderson and Tung from the last match, that's done them well. So it'd be interesting to see what they do with the batting and the bowling, and maybe even the wicket keeping for the next test.
Yeah, I guess it also depends a lot on if Stokes can bowl, because if Stokes can bowl, then you can get away with just three specialist seamers, and then that actually gives you the freedom to either recall a certain wicketkeeper who maybe we shouldn't get into, or to just go for like a specialist number three, even like an Alex Lees possibly. Obviously he's an opener, but you know they like him and he could do a job. But that's more for you know, for next week and next time.
I mean, that's an hour right there, right?
Yeah. Should we just go back just a little bit today, just revel in it a bit more? Just what was your favourite moment from the whole day?
There were two Harry Brook. There were back-to-back fours from Harry Brook when it was sort of like the real nub of the game earlier on, and he smashed two balls through the covers, which I felt was the moment when the crowd really came to life. I mean, they were cheering every run straight away from the get-go this morning, but that felt like
literally actually like the very first ball, because you're wondering actually, is the crowd going to be fully up for this, or is it going to be quite tense?
Yeah,
Crawley drops that first single, and the crowd just lift off.
And that feels a long time ago, Crawley and Ducky. You know, that's how sort of emotionally draining it has been, because it's only, 4 or 5 o'clock now. So that was a moment. And then from a sort of a cricket-y point of view, watching Stark tear in and really sort of put the cat amongst the pigeons in that, and you know, really sort of give England a good scare, that was quite a visceral viewing as well.
Mm. Mine was just that first Mark Wood six, because you sort of think he can't do it again. Firstly, like, surely he can't like try this with this being the situation. Surely it can't come off, and it does. And that, yeah, and I genuinely just burst out laughing when that happened.
Yeah, those moments are great, aren't they? That really punctured the pressure, I guess. Yeah. And they're such nice blokes, so they seem such lovely blokes. Wood and Wokes are like the nice guys of English cricket, and that they were there at the end to see them over the line in the Ashes series was a really special little touch.
Yeah, it was just and the other thing with Wokes that had the feeling of was that that test in COVID in 2020, like the classic England one at Old Trafford, so you know, just across the road or whatever, against Pakistan, where again it was England were basically out big partnership.
Yeah, with Butler that one.
Yeah. And then again, you had Butler getting out towards the end, and then. Yeah. And then England still just seeing at home. God, Test cricket is good, isn't it?
It's great. I mean, he just said, I've just read some of his comments after the game, and he said that gave him a little taste of what it must have been like for Ben Stokes in 2019. And really, it was. You know, he's basically shepherded England home in an Ashes Test match there to keep the series alive. And he just looked pleased as punch, walking off, you know, beaming smile. And I like that little grey cow's lick he's got on his head. You know, he's just dreamy, isn't he? So it was fantastic that he was there at the end, you know, in his comeback test.
Yeah, just lots of nice boys on both sides, it should be said. Yeah,
and on this podcast.
Yeah. Thank you. Right, that is it for us from Headingley. But don't despair, because we'll be back tomorrow for a longer weekly show to look back at the whole third Ashes test. Yaz will be back on the hosting chair. Also a bit of time on the Women's Ashes, who are staging a do-or-die comeback of their own.
It's all happening, isn't it?
Yeah, cricket. Yeah. Cricket good. Cricket's good. Right.
Cricket good.
Cheers.
Cheers. Sports Social Podcast Network.